Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa, Island of Secrets. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here to talk about episode 16, So Close to the End, a really funny episode, I thought. Even though we are in this pagonging, it was a very entertaining episode of television, I would say. So please welcome first the... I actually couldn't think of a duo for this episode, which is weird because it was the Loved Ones episode. But anyway, here's Mike Bloom.
I'm so happy to be here, Shannon. You know, I just turned 30 a couple of weeks ago. So as I'm getting there in the years, I feel like I don't know how many chances I have to get to talk to you about International Survivor. So here I am once again. Happy to be here.
Oh, my God. 30 last week. I mean, you might not make it to next week. So I'm just so glad that you're here. We need this time together. And if it is your last one, then I have a great guest for you to go out on because we have someone who is so apt. For this season, for this episode, for this post-merge, for sure, because he's the bus builder, the godfather. Really, he was making cults before it was a thing. Please welcome the great Werner.
Well, to Shannon and Mike and everyone out there, it's awesome to be back on the podcast.
Yeah, we're so happy to have you here, Werner. Though, admittedly, it's been a little bit of time. I feel like, the times you appeared on the podcast has now been tracked by the markers of last time you were on. You had a Mahindra car, now you're on without a Mahindra car, according to Jean. So I guess in those intervening months, what has life been for you and the family since that time?
Oh, you know what? Life goes on. And I think for me, Survivor's really been amazing. But I just got back to what I do, fostering a local church in Secunda, involved with a local rugby club. I think I'm getting around a little bit more, speaking at companies, at schools, every now and then. Similar type of things that I was doing before Survivor, but now people also want to hear about Survivor. So in the past year, that has changed. It's almost like there's a little bit of a new spice in my stew, if I can call it that way.
Yeah, and obviously you've been watching the season and we've heard the comparison now for many, many weeks and months of you to Rob. I think that the comparison is very much there. I've called you two of the best players I've ever seen. So what have you been thinking kind of watching this game and someone run it, I think, quite similarly to how you ran your game?
That's a great question, and maybe as the podcast go on, we'll touch on different areas of Rob's game and compare it to mine, if that's what we want to do. I think, let me just start generally, broadly, and you mentioned it as well, Shannon, in previous podcasts, which I've all listened to. When someone is playing an incredibly good Survivor game, it doesn't necessarily make for incredibly good TV, especially if people want the apple cart to be upset. And so what some people might say, oh, they're not enjoying the last few weeks. I am. I am enjoying it. I'm looking at a man controlling the scene at the moment. I know what he's thinking, or I know almost that tension or the pressure you feel aligning the ducks or the stars the whole time. So it's not stealing any of the pleasure for me personally. As I'm enjoying the show, as I'm drawing to an end, he's playing a very great game, Rob.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting, Werner, that you say, you know, people want the apple cart to be upset, which was definitely the mentality around this episode, as it has been the past few weeks. But I would say the mentality around this episode was several people realizing that they are on an apple cart, when maybe the past few weeks they're like, oh, this is an orange truck.
No, Darrell's like, wait, there are apples? Where are the apples? I want an apple.
I'm the hungriest person here. I need the apples.
Yeah, I mean, this was obviously part of the begonging, and a really obvious person went home. We all thought Mike was next on the chopping block, but like, I was glad it was such an entertaining episode. That tribal council was so funny. I honestly thought, like, great TV moment. It was such a different thing than we've ever seen before. Literally two people, or should I say like one and a half people, I don't know if Darrell was quite getting it, but like two people realizing what we've been watching with total transparency for weeks. All in good nature, because that's the kind of person Mike is who was leading that. And I thought that was, like, really good TV.
That might have been the weirdest tribal council I've ever seen in my life. It was so weird. And I don't know if Mike just decided, I'm going to have fun with this, or if he was, like, really hungry and tired. But it's like he just, in a weird way, came out of his shell, and he was, like, giving Rob a fist bump when Rob was like there was this tense moment. I know you know you're wanting to blindside me, and then him and Daryl, they went on like they smoked something, you know, before tribal council. It was super weird, and I wonder if it wasn't at that moment like a little bit of a humoristic way just to relieve tension. You know, we're in trouble, we can't do anything, so let's just laugh about it. But it made for a very funny tribal council, with Rob looking extremely serious and worried right behind Mike.
I cannot wait to get into everything about this tribal council, because I have so many different reactions to it. I will say, as immaculate of a game Rob has been playing, this tribal council is going to be very interesting, I think, in how people ultimately look at his game, considering what he said, what he felt like he had to say. There are some comparisons, Werner, to the fact that, we didn't have them split up three ways, but we did have the castaways split up two ways and then meeting at tribal council. So things were a bit more of a live wire than maybe they have been previously. But yeah, I mean, this was like watching Sherlock Holmes and Watson solve the mystery when you already knew the answer to the mystery on page two. Like, it was simultaneously delightful yet frustrating to watch at the same time, of them just sort of coming to a, oh my god, yes, this is what's happening. Actually, I have the clip of them, part of them coming to come to Jesus moment. Let's see what they have to say.
Dura, where does this leave you? Because I can see you are heavily conflicted.
Hi.
What's going on?
Trying to figure out what's going on right now. So that means if Mikey goes home tonight, I might just be going home next at the next tribal council.
Odds are you probably are.
Yeah,
because then Alyssa would have strong.
Yeah. Oh, that's so clever of you guys.
Oh, wow.
And that means after me, it's going to be Nicole.
No, Nicole's part of Saula, bro.
No, was that the original Saula?
Yeah, it must be the original.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was. Jeez, man, this is confusing right now.
No, it's pretty obvious. So it'll be me, you, and then you. And then it'll be final three for these three.
Oh, so this is what you're talking about. They won bonds. I see.
That's
okay.
So cool.
Okay.
I didn't think people speak about it. I don't know why.
Wow.
Damn.
That means we're both blindsided right now.
I told you we should be suspicious.
But the only thing is, I'll survive another day. I'm going to just be like, anyways.
What just happened?
Whatever just happened right now, I'm still sticking to my vote. I have no choice. Locked and loaded.
I think if you drank every time Darrow said locked and loaded, you'd be pretty loaded yourself by the end of this tribal council.
My favorite was, oh, wow. That was what was getting me. Like, it's like Ross from Friends. Oh, wow. Just like the whole time he wasn't really getting it. And watching Mike try to drag him through the realization against his will almost was so entertaining. I think for someone like Mike, the reason he was laughing is like really sometimes all you can do is laugh. I mean, the realizations he was having in this tribal was like, Rob was never loyal to him, and neither was Nicole, and Darrell wasn't loyal, and they were all going back to Rob the whole time, and his plans, everything he thought was happening was wrong. Like, what can you do in that moment? I think Mike has a good enough head on his shoulders to just be like, damn, like, I got played in a massive way, and I just kind of have to, like, A, kind of commend that, and B, just kind of laugh at the absurdity of the extremity of the situation. I mean, it's literally like they just broke free from a cult. Like, they just realized they're in a cult, and they're kind of leaving that. So, I mean, this tribal council was crazy, super public for sure. So, Mike, you talked about where Rob is with this. What were you not liking or liking about what he was doing here?
I mean, I think there's some good and bad, as is, you know, with everything that someone does on Survivor. Though I would say for Rob, this is, in my opinion, the worst he's come off at a tribal council in quite some time. And granted, it's still a great tribal performance in comparison to some other people, which we'll certainly get into. I think the thing that's really stuck in my craw personally is the thing that he let slip of, I'm sticking to what the promise that I made on day one. Because that is a giant red flag, and maybe the flag needed to be redder for Darrow, but that's a huge red flag. I mean, I compare it to in Survivor Blood versus Water, when you have Tyson and Jervis saying, oh yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, and essentially, you know, really sending signal flares to Sierra about you're number four, which causes her to flip and cause the rock draw, which ended up, you know, not really being anything of note except for a big TV moment, but really could have changed the course of the game had it gone a different way. I just think that this Rob has done such a good job of keeping his cards so close to his vest and keeping all his ducks in a row. And I do understand, and Werner, I would love to hear your opinions on this as well, of like when you get down to the end game and you inevitably have to cut these ties, how you really finagle cutting these wires on a bomb without setting off an explosion that's going to have, you know, reverberations on the jury. But I mean, this is the most transparent Rob has been with his game, and I'm not sure how that's going to play.
Yeah, I actually made a note here. It should be obvious, but you definitely experience it firsthand, obviously, when you're out there, and I know it because I experience it. You can manage a large group of people in a way where you take them all together and you can have an order, a pecking order and stuff, and everyone will be happy. But up to a point, it's almost like this pot starts to boil around 6 to 5. It is a very delicate time. There's not a lot of spaces left in the game. People now really, it's not me playing against this other 6 people anymore, fighting for to be in a majority alliance. People now want a seat in the finals. And the moment you get to 6 or 5, that's when different types of stuff starts to jump out behind the corners and you are exposed, stuff you said. And that's why I think I expected this to happen now. And in a sense, the same happens with me. You have to at one stage then break away, and then it comes up. It comes out and it's clear, okay, so I'm working with these people. And that moment, when that moment happens, you just hope it doesn't happen at 9, 8, or 7, but hopefully at 5 or 4, so that you only have to jump into that final bit and be successful, which of course for me wasn't. But yeah, you can't hide near the end. The lies are going to come up. And I'm not saying lies in a bad way, but everything that we applaud as strategy, playing other people, then at that moment comes back to bite you. And sometimes you come off okay.
Yeah, but I mean, saying day one was like a faux pas, you know, there's no other way around it. But at the same time, he knows he has a tight 4 of 6, Durand, Micah on the bottom, so it doesn't really matter what they think. So Ulla have secured Letitia, obviously a lot better than Sierra was secured in Blood versus Water. He knows from Nicole there are no tricky advantages from Island of Secrets. And he's so well protected. Like, this was never going to be a rock situation from Blood versus Water because he's immune. That so we'll have 2 more idols. Like, even if Letitia did flip, that she'd be flipping probably to a completely protected 3. So again, that was a faux pas, but like, he's still so well protected. And then like, when you go to the rest of it, the purposeful strategy of kind of making it really public, when you get to him like really outing that he knew that Mike was coming for him, it's a real Godfather move. He knows that Mike, you know, he didn't have a plan for Mike. So when he says, well, I wasn't coming for you, it's like, again, Mike knew he wasn't really in the plans, or he kind of had a sense he was at the bottom of the pecking order. Like, of course he's going to make his plans, but Rob kind of guilts him for that. Like, as a friend, I wasn't coming for you. And he kind of has to make it public because they have been on the Island of Secrets. Nicole's on the opposite end of the tribal council. So it's like no whispering going on. I guess he could have got up and whispered to her, but that's still drawing attention to it. So he kind of has to make it public, but he's so kind of secure with his form, with his idols and everything, and he's literally immune, that I think like he's gonna be okay.
I mean, I agree that I think that when it came to being in the game, and you know, suffice it to say that he was also immune. He had the immunity necklace around him and an idol as well. But I mean, for me, it just keeps going back to what I've been questioning the past few weeks, which is, how is this going to play on the jury? And you know, we'll definitely get into it. I love Jeff. I'm gonna admit here, it's starting to wear a bit on me, his jury routine, or the way that they keep cutting back to him making these comments. You know, he said that Rob was entitled this week. I don't know if that's going to play necessarily with everybody else, but we spoke last week, Shannon, about how, you know, it depends on how Rob is going to send people to the jury. And granted, Durand is Durand and Mike seem to be in good spirits. I just wonder how his reveal that this was his plan the entire time, how is that going to play on these people? Are they going to say, wow, that really is masterful, that he was the one that was able to negotiate getting these people to the end? Or are they going to say, he made a tight alliance with me and he was preferring these other people the entire time? I don't feel good about it. And that's the tightrope of Survivor. I just wanted to bring that up because, again, Rob has done such a great job of managing these relationships as it is. And I totally agree that I think him outing Mike and sort of almost putting the blame onto Mike himself by being like, I didn't want to do this, but you came for me first, was fantastic in sending Mike off in good spirits. I just don't know if him revealing his predestined final three right now, how is that going to play with everybody else?
I want to come in there, and I think it's masterful what he's doing. Is they're voting Mike off, but he's saying, Mike, you voted against me first. So in a sense, Mike cannot sit in the jury and say, oh, I can't believe what Rob did to me, because whether Rob manipulated the situation, it is true that Mike did come for him. And so it has been with every single person that went to the jury. They've all played against Rob. And from my experience, it's almost easier sending people to the jury that literally played against you. Even myself and PK, I would tell him, PK, we're going toe-to-toe. We're buddies, but we're going toe-to-toe. It was easier sending him there and even seeing him to the jury. I knew there wasn't a hard thing because he was gunning for me and I was gunning for him. But if Rob, for example, had to get rid of Nicole this episode, you would have seen fireballs because the bitterness there. But you are my brother, you know, my ally, my island best friend, and we've been together, and now you see me. If something like that happens, that could hurt him. But at the moment, he's still just disposing of people that actually is actively playing against him. But next week, it'll be the first one, maybe Doral, where he needs to chop off one of his own, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but this should have been that person. Mike's been his best friend the whole time. But as you said, brilliant move then to be like, well, maybe we were more opposing from your side than we thought we were. I mean, you were coming after me, right? And as we all know, Rob would have come after Mike at a point anyway. But he's put it on Mike, which I do think is great. And I think having Mike and Jacques in the jury is a good thing for him. Like, they're real fans.
Yeah.
I think that they're the two who might kind of calm the situation down. But we'll get back to Rob. We're going to talk a lot about Rob and the Verna comparisons. But I want to talk a little bit about another person who I think is having issues with the jury at this tribal council. And that is Nicole. Like, I don't understand what she was. Was she actually upset at this tribal council? Because in confessional, she fully understood. Like, she got it. Then she comes there and she's raging at Rob. I mean, just to go for a couple of the things she said. She says it was the worst day of her life when she's about to vote someone out. I also, it's like, Mike and Doral, hanging out with you was the worst day ever. Like, couldn't have had a worse time. But also, the thing that really annoyed me was she was like, she complained about not having her letters from home to hear about her kids. But like, if you remember, the time they played for letters, food, and an advantage, she chose to go for food. And last week, during the, you know, Yankee swap reward, she had the last choice and she chose to scavenge for the food and she could have taken the letter. So you can't say, I've never had my letter, I don't know how my family is, when you've opted not to take your letter. Like, you literally chose something else. And the jury not loving it. So, Mike, what do you think about what Nicole was doing here? Was it legit? I don't understand.
I think it was legit. I mean, how could it not be?
Well, she fake cries, we know that.
Yeah, but I think it was 100% emotional, and that's why it doesn't make sense, right? And I would also say, I'd also contest the point that you said the jury wasn't having it. I think this was the least reactive the jury has been to something Nicole has said in quite some time. I guess I would say it's the least reactive that Jeff has been to something that Nicole has said. We do not get a comment from the peanut gallery about her specifically. And I will also say, to give a little bit of a tangent onto Nicole as well, I actually feel like the reveal of the All Soul of Final Three might have actually benefited Nicole, as weird as it is to say, because let's remember that for some strange reason, everybody who's been on the Loose Change player side thinks that Nicole was with them. When Jacques went to Ponderosa last week, he's like, yeah, I know one person didn't vote with me, but I don't know if it was Mike or Nicole or Doral. Like, she, for some reason, maybe through her social bonds, legitimately had them snowed. And I wonder if her coming across now is like, yeah, she was making tight bonds with everybody, but she was, you know, part of this really powerful alliance the entire time, might endear herself to the jury. It's still an uphill climb. But to go back to your question, 100% emotional. I think she understood Rob's game perspective. So from that perspective, I think that Rob's choice was smart, even if on paper he didn't necessarily realize that Steffi had seen Gina only 2 days beforehand, didn't exactly need another engagement with her on the island. But I honestly think it was Nicole coming there, seeing Rob, Letitia, and Steffi talk so much, especially, I'm assuming especially Letitia, talked too much, you know, seeing her daughter and how emotionally overwhelming it was. And I think that just let everything bubble to the surface for Nicole, on top of Rob saying across the way, like, hey, Nicole, we good. I think she took it as, him questioning her loyalty, and I think then she just sort of let loose about everything.
She just seems so composed in the confessional.
What's interesting for me, before the challenge, I wrote down a few quotes here. I did my homework, you guys. So before they went out, she says, today probably, she said, I'm going to fight tooth and nail. And then she said, with regards to certain of them that would be able to see families and others that won't, she said, there will be strategic repercussions, but we will be okay with it. That was her words. And it just shows you the kind of emotions family just almost like unlocks in a person, whereas in certain moments in that tribal council, she definitely was not okay with it.
Yeah. I want to talk about that a little bit because actually, I think there's a little bit of discourse that you and Tony had on our little question thread on Twitter, Werner. When it comes to loved ones challenges, which you ended up winning in your season, which actually was a little bit of a comparable situation where in both loved ones challenges, one person, in the case of both you and Rob, just like got out to an early lead and never looked back. But when it comes to picking people, it's a really, again, another tightrope to walk because you're dealing with emotions, which is one of the most unstable elements in a game that you're trying to maintain stability in 24/7. Terry Dietz back in Survivor Exile Island sort of came up with this weird little stratification system of, spouses are more important than children, who are more important than parents. And it's clear that Rob struck a nerve in, you know, picking Steffi specifically over Nicole, considering how much she spoke about wanting to hear from her children, which, as Shannon pointed out, she had myriad opportunities in the past. But despite that, from your perspective, I mean, how difficult is it for you to try to discern, you know, this person needs love more than another person, and that's why I should pick them, even if it's not strategically sound?
Yeah. So, there's a lot of stuff, so you have to stop me if you have to. Firstly, this should only be strategic and nothing else. No one should be, if you are Rob or if you are Werner or whoever wins that challenge, you must put your heart under your arm and choose with your head. It's the only way, because you can't start ranking who needs love or not. You can't measure it, and you're just going to get into trouble. So you have to think strategically, which I think Rob did. And let's just use my season as an example. They gave me the opportunity to choose a majority, which breaks the whole purpose for this conversation almost. Because if you choose the majority, you don't have to give any excuse. You just say, listen, that's how it is, and we're going to vote you out. Yeah, in principle. So the moment they gave me a majority, I didn't stress, but that was at 5, and I got to take 3 people, which gave me the majority, and that was at that stage where I knew it's coming out now. I won the challenge, and I played the idol for Jean, so I knew I was out. If I did not win, I'm going home. So might as well take your own alliance. Right, no one's going to die if they don't see a loved one. If your loved one is about to die, they'll come and fetch you off the island. Terry Dietz showed us that as well. So no one, you're not stealing from anyone. They can go home. If they want to go home, they can make it easier for you to get to the end. So you're only thing strategic, and that's my take. Right. But now, here's another thing. On the island, you build a society, and this society sometimes adopt the weirdest rules and values, like we already saw with Jacques, I don't know what you call it. Exile Island episode, just exiled in the tribe episode, something like that. A tribe finds a culture, and then this culture adopts rules, whether you speak about them or not, they are there. And sometimes that pushes people. But you promised me, but I have a channel we spoke about. And so, unfortunately, that becomes part of strategy. So you have to ask yourself, what are the rules we are living by here? And then use that in your strategy. So, that's quite complex. But I think that Rob did the right thing by keeping Steffi close to him. But it was very, very hard for Nicole nonetheless.
Yeah, and you talk about these, like, kind of arbitrary cultural touch points that you create, and it was true. They were like, we'll go with the women, like, these really random, meaningless things, but I guess that was built into kind of the values they were putting onto that challenge. And I do think Rob made some really good decisions. Like, he sent his number one ally to Island of Secrets, someone he could trust the most to keep an eye on the people on the bottom of the tribe. And he, you know, took Steffi back. Maybe she could feel a little bit better about the couple of votes that had been on her, even though she doesn't seem to feel that good. Letitia, I think everyone can understand, is like the mother. But then it's a hard thing. And also, you know, she's in the final four with him and stuff. So he's trying to keep her close. But you can't just say, look, I'm going to take Steffi and Letitia because they're in my majority, and I'm going to send Nicole to Island of Secrets so she can keep an eye on you. You can't say that. You have to, you know, it is strategic, but you're saying it's emotional. So we have to come up with these excuses. I mean, it was easy for Letitia because she's 58, which is apparently like on her deathbed. It killed me every single time. It was so, so funny. It was just basically like, look, I have to give it to Letitia. Who knows if she'll make it back to South Africa? I mean, the woman is 58. This might be the last time she sees her daughter. How could I rob her of that moment? I love that. But then with Steffi, that's a really hard one to make an excuse for, because as we know, Gina is just her very, very close friend. She's not a husband or anything like that, which I think Steffi got a little lucky with, because obviously she sees Gina. She's not super enthused, but if it was maybe a partner, it would have been a little more noticeable. But he has to say that it's because Steffi hasn't, you know, didn't eat at the Yankee swap, in quotation marks, she didn't eat. But, you know, she ate the episode before, so it's not a huge thing. So it was just hard with Steffi. Yeah. It was just hard to give the excuse that's not, look, it's Steffi because she's in my final three, okay? Like, we know that's what it is. And I do think it was 100% strategic, but he has to give a very difficult for Steffi emotional reason of why he's doing this.
I agree with that, Sham, 100%. But speaking from the guy that's selecting, think strategic, but you must still drive the narrative, right? I think that's where we meet, where almost like strategy meets a moment, where strategy meets emotion, because you have to communicate the emotions. For example, I said to think of the youngest, she missed her mom, and we all knew at that stage that Tom and his wife has been through a very difficult time. Different aspects. And I said, I don't know when last they had the opportunity just to enjoy a special time together. That's what I said. And then both those statements were true, but it was 100% strategically driven. But you have to speak the language of the tribe. And I think that is what Rob was trying to do when he said she's the oldest and she's the youngest.
It was just in such a funny way, though.
I cannot get over, because you could have also very easily said, like, I know she's missed her family.
Yeah,
a
like
lot.
It's her child.
Daughter's here.
Yeah, she's a mother. Yeah.
But instead, he's like, she's at death's door. This is her final wish. We've decided to honor it. It's so interesting, though, Verna.
She's 58.
Like you said,
can I just point out? Anyway.
I know, but even like as much caution as you took, even when you did that, Verna, you still get Jean back at camp. He's like, my eyes are open now. Werner does not want me to go to the final three with him, and as a result, I've got to take him out. So I think it's always tough to be in that position. But I think something that's really interesting about this iteration, which Jeff Pittman pointed out on Twitter, was I think it's been conventional wisdom for a lot of former Survivor players. They always espouse, throw the loved ones challenge. You don't want to be in that position to give and take away love. Yeah. But making it a dual reward and immunity challenge, I think was super interesting, because it's like, it really takes away that initiative to throw the challenge, because now you have this idea of safety dangling in front of you. And I do wonder if, and hopefully when we talk to Rob, if that really influenced his desire to win the challenge.
Yeah, I mean, you have to win immunity, and you get to send people to Island of Secrets, which becomes like, there was so much more than here than just, okay, well, we're going to go off to reward. You know that as the winner, you're going to have those kind of strategic decisions as well. Like, to have his stranglehold on the game, he absolutely, I think, did need a win. And he was, you know, fortunate that he did get to take at least 50% of the tribe. But I just wonder, you know, we're talking, you did the exact same thing, Werner. You chose your strategic allies, but you gave them emotional reasons. What could Rob have said for Steffi? What is a good excuse about Steffi seeing her friend Gina? Like, John may have said what she did on the island, but on the podcast with us a couple of weeks ago, she was like, I know it wasn't as important for me to see a friend as it was for some people to see family members, husbands, wives. Yeah. So what could Rob have said, like, about Steffi seeing Gina?
Yeah. He didn't have a great thing to say, but strategically, if Nicole was emotionally if maybe in a way, I mean, if him and Nicole could have swapped places.
Should he have given up the reward to Nicole?
I was thinking that, yeah.
Maybe, because let's assume that him and Nicole is number one and two, and they're both, you know, each other's number one. To have the one on the one place and the one on the other is strategically the best. And I think for moments, Nicole wanted to accept that, but just being emotionally so overwhelmed, you know, Mike, like you said in the beginning, it's just hard to keep your, you know, your logical faculties together when you are emotionally absolutely overthrown. So good move by Rob, but the bomb exploded a little bit. How could he have known? I've got another question, and I asked it last year as well. Is it a South African thing to believe we are so entitled to certain things? It is a word I see always with survivors of Africa on social media. This person is so entitled. This person is so entitled. That person is so entitled. We sit there and we believe, I deserve to see my loved one. And then it makes us bitter. Always, do you guys see that in other shows as well?
I mean, I don't want to paint South Africa. It might be a Saula thing. It might not be a South Africa thing. Because, I mean, look at, like, how they describe, again in this episode, the way they describe people on the bottom trying to save themselves and make a move. I mean, Rob obviously did it against Mike at Tribal, but that's in public, that's strategic. But in confessional, Steffi this episode calls Mike unstable for having to make other moves. And it's been said by Nicole before as well that it's weird. Why would they be doing this? Like, why aren't you sticking with the status quo in which I get to the end? So I don't know if it's a South Africa thing, but definitely Saula have kind of felt like this game, you know, was their God-given right. I don't really know why. Maybe that's a bit extreme, but it definitely has seemed like they felt it was like theirs to lose or to win. So yeah, I don't know if I would say it's South Africa though.
I mean, we've certainly seen entitlement, I think, before on Survivor. I mean, look no further than I would say last season of Australian Survivor. I think specifically the end game, that final vote had a lot to do with certain people feeling entitled. I think it just comes down to
personality. You know, it's reality TV contestants. That's what it is.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, though, I think, comparing sort of this mentality, because what I've seen from the internet as well is a lot of comparisons between, you know, the way this cast is sort of interacting and like an old to middle school era season of Survivor, where I really do feel like in the US version, the people that they're casting nowadays, and I feel like the true meta aspect of the game, people are much more to like shake people's hands and say good game than maybe to feel like you deprive me of a spot in the final three that I deserve. Therefore, I'm not going to vote against you. And maybe it's just because of the fact that there's been so many iterations of Survivor in the US that it's become a bit more played out and people understand that it is part of the game. Whereas, yes, there's been so many iterations around the world, but this is only the seventh iteration of Survivor South Africa, arguably the second season of this quote unquote reboot that's been done in this series. So I do wonder if you still have people with that mentality, much like you did back in like Survivor Australia, the Australian Outback, I should say.
100%. And that was one of my fears playing, because I was going in game ready, you know, like having consumed a lot of US material and Australian and podcasts. I have shifted from, you are hurting me as a human, to you are playing a game against me. And I was actually worried, should I get to the end, would the jury be able to make, let's call it the US shift, to say, you played well done, or would they be stuck back in more cases, you know? And of that, I was not sure. Whenever we get this player or players across different survivor spectrums that suffers with this entitlement thing, they never do well with fans or with a jury. So just to throw it out there, you know, possible future players, it's important to remember the game owes you nothing, and no one owes you anything. Someone came to me in our season. It was not Anna or Jean that was the two left at home camp. After I got off, and with tears, told me that I stole from them the fact that their loved one could come out and visit them in the Philippines. So in their mind, it's theirs.
Mm.
Now, they are entitled to it, and I stole it away. And people pick up on that way of thinking, and it never goes down well. So just throwing it out there, That doesn't work in Survivor. Not if you want to win.
That's a really interesting point. And on that note, I want to talk about this idea of the jury, because it's something you dealt with a bit in your season as well. We've done a lot of cross comparisons between the jury, I think, becoming more and more vocal as the tribal councils commence. I know that your jury was sitting very close to you guys, so you couldn't help but see how they were reacting. We talked to John about that a couple weeks ago, and you mentioned it before a bit, but you have this moment in PK's boot episode last season where PK essentially tries to blackmail you, saying, hey, if you vote me out, I'm going to poison the jury against you. And you have this mentality of like, I can't focus on what's going on two islands at once. I have to focus on what's going on with this current island, which Rob and Nicole espoused as well, and the jury wasn't too happy about to hear it actually in person. What are your thoughts about the jury this season and the way that certain people like Rob and Nicole and Steffi are trying to sort of handle those personalities?
Yeah, because I heard you guys, it has come up as a topic in the podcast. Was it last week or the week before, or both, actually? You are playing with the jury. I hear what they are saying when they said, it's hard for me to play the game and play the jury. I hear that. It was my words as well. But at the same time, I am playing towards the jury, and I have the whole game in the way I've treated those people. I literally would play hard against someone that we would vote off, but still be kind to them because I know I'm leaving them on the jury, you know. But when I'm at camp, I have to give playing at the tribe the first priority above playing for the jury. But it has a priority, the jury, but for me as a player, it is still second priority, if that makes sense. There were some of our people on our season that was playing to the jury while they were sitting at tribal, and it annoyed the tribe who was still alive in the game. So I don't think if you specifically play the jury very actively that it's good for you, unless you know how to do it very subtly.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a very fine line, but I do think Sa'ula have been like well beyond the line at times, like not like anything morally. I'm just saying in terms of like catering to the jury, like at least play the game and try be kind of neutral to the jury. But what we've seen from Sa'ula is Rob and Nicole said in front of the jury that they don't care about the jury. I mean, Steffi in this episode literally laughed in Darrell's face about how she wasn't going to be taking him to reward because he put votes on her. So she thinks he's going to be a juror. Maybe just don't laugh in people's face. I don't know. Just a little tip for me to any future Survivor players. Probably don't do that. You know, Nicole is a weird one because I have to credit Nicole's game in the game. You know, like the way that she's worked her way back in with Rob after she voted out Nathan to be Rob's number one is impressive. The way that she lied to Mike and played him consistently for a long time, for days and weeks on end. That's impressive manipulation. That's impressive acting chops. I mean, that's really manipulative. So I'm impressed by that in a game sense. But then I also feel like some things she's done have been really unnecessary. I've said before, the way that she made a final three deal with Kubis only to never work with him and then vote him out. Like, you don't need to be doing that. It's beyond the fine line of how the jury are going to feel towards you. And I mean, I think it comes out here, you know, Darrell votes for Steffi. Darrell in his voting confessional is still like, I hope you go home, Steffi. It's like, she's not going home, Drow. Like, it's not happening. But Mike knows it's over. And I kind of love that he had the final realization and his vote was wasted, but it was, like, powerful to me that his vote was, like, his realizing vote. And who does he put his vote on when he could vote for anyone? He could vote for Letitia because she didn't turn with him. He could vote for Darrell because Darrell also betrayed him. He could vote for Steffi, who's been, like, his, you know, nemesis at parts throughout this and, like, is just directly opposed to him. He was going to vote Steffi out when he walked into Tribal. But instead, he chooses to vote for Nicole. And he says it's, like, an instinctive thing he does when he gets up there. And, like, look, he's, I think, one of the more strategic jurors, someone who will hear them out. But it can't be good for her social game that when Mike is going to put a wasted vote on someone to kind of just... Rob's obviously immune, but he wants to heap all of his frustrations about the incredible amount he just found out at Tribal Council, and he votes for his former ally and good friend in the game, Nicole, in that moment. She must be doing something that is beyond the line to put people off.
I'm very intrigued by comparison. I mean, in one of Mike's exit interviews, he says, the people that I think are going to win are either Rob or Nicole. And with Nicole, he specifically says, I'm hoping hoping that she'll explain herself. She'll do something at the end that will justify the vote, which makes me, I mean, I know he doesn't represent the entirety of the jury, but I wonder if that just represents like a general attitude. I think for all of our fan fictioning about Dorau or Letitia beating the Amigos at the end, it does seem from Jacques Ponderosa last week that they've all laughed off the notion of voting for either one of them.
Jeff wants to vote for Dorau over
Rob. But he got shouted down from that. Everyone's like, you are a dumbass if you do that. So suffice it to say, I don't know if that's a slam dunk in that case. So yeah, maybe they're expecting some sort of like Christie-esque, you know, turnaround speech from Nicole at the very end of like, yeah, you thought I was doing this the entire time, but actually I was playing the best game. If they're looking for that, I don't know if they're going to find that.
I'd love it. I don't see it, but I'd love it.
Something to comment on, you know, the whole treatment of the jury. Having been on the island, you actually speak about the jury quite a lot. Like, I know there was a scene, I can't remember if it was a secret scene. It was the one time when our jury was just, they were just bringing it. Maybe it was just when Tony got there. And when we got back to the camp, Jean was like walking up and down, throwing stuff in the fire. It's just like, she's over the jury. Do you guys recall something like that?
There was a scene I remember where Jean was pretty pissed off at the way the jury was reacting. And I do remember that particularly. But I guess on that note, actually speaking of Jean, Werner, because that was sort of what brought up your mentality around this time of the game of, hey, maybe if I send someone like Jean to the jury, that can help, I guess, provide the antidote to the jury poison and maybe turn the things more favorably to me. Now, I guess in a manner of speaking, Rob might have done that with Mike, considering the mood that Mike had towards Rob by the time he joined the jury.
Yeah, both Mike and Jacques will be jury, let's call it the antidote for bitter juryitis. But we didn't have a lot of super fans post merge. Some of our super fans left before, even on a day two. Seamus, he was quite strong as a fan. We left. We lost Tevin, which was quite a strong fan.
Ace
and even someone like Josie, Ace. And then Josie, not so much a super fan, but no, she knew it was a game. And then we had a lot of
Martinez
characters. You know, we had a different show. So we were worried that we were speaking a lot about the lack of fans on the jury, because a fan would know that Tony Vilakos goes through the game, steps on toes, yet he wins, because once people get past business, they realize, man, this guy outplayed us. And we were worried, will this be acknowledged by our jury? And so for me, Sean was an antidote, specifically because we spoke hours about the nature of the jury. So I knew if I could send her there, but then Katenka turned on me, if I could send her there, then she can carry on the conversation that we had on the beach. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I mean, I know Jeff is a super fan, and Jeff has said he's going to vote for Dorau over Rob. And Jeff, as we've known, is kind of like leading what seems like a bitter jury. So I guess it kind of depends on, A, maybe your level of fandom definitely works into it, but then also just, I guess, who you are as a person.
100% your personality. But here's another thing. Do you guys remember Chris Doughty sitting on the beach, what was Twilight, was that her name? That went with him into the final two? And then he tells her, do you remember that? you should tell this jury. You should tell them exactly, you know, what you feel about them. Don't let them stand up to them, you know. And he's just putting fire, more petrol on the fire, flaming her up to disrespect the jury. And in a sense, if at camp the whole time you are talking about how you dislike the jury, you get to tribal council and you already seeing them as your enemy. And if I was there, I would do that. I would say, now, you know, when you look at those, that person on the jury, you should just give them, you know, some kind of look or something. Just, you should stand up for yourself now. But then I won't do it. I would pull a Chris Woody there and make sure that everyone makes enemies of the jury except me.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You're bullshitting them, but at least they're hearing what they want to hear instead of hearing the truth that they don't necessarily want to.
Yeah.
But do Fa'ula have the capacity to do that? That's what I'm really interested to see. Because is Nicole going to stand up and be like, look, I'm an ice queen, and I was manipulating you the entire time? Or is it going to be like, it was the moral thing to do, and then she's not going to get any vote? So I guess, like, from what we see in confessional and stuff, I don't feel like she's really owning her game. We see a lot of the moralistic stuff come through to us, which must be authentically who she is. So if she's bringing that to Final Tribal Council, that's a problem. I wish we were getting confessionals like from her, like, I'm playing Mike and it's fun, and I'm going to get to Final Tribal Council and I'm going to say how I played them all. Like, I mean, I'd love to see it. I just don't know if that's who Nicole is as a person. And you know, Rob's doing that. Like, Rob is thinking about it all really strategically. I think every bit of content we've had from Rob is so strategic, where the rest of Sa'ula maybe isn't.
That's the tough thing as well. We got this really cringy confessional from Nicole this episode of, oh, they may think that I'm a puppet, but I'm not a puppet.
I'm a
collaborator. And it's like, you're a puppet. Yeah. If you have to say that people might think I'm a puppet, you're coming off as a puppet. Perception is reality in the game. And I think that, you know, if she tries to pull a Rob during the CPAY vote and says, I have no strings on me, that'd be awesome. But I think it's tough considering how much she's really said every tribal council, I'm sticking by my morals. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if that cuts me at the end, so be it. I think that's really tough for her to make that about face and come off authentically to the jury of it. Yes, I was playing that attitude the entire time.
My guess is she's going to take that vocabulary as far as she goes in the game, even into Final Tribal Council, because it is part of her tribe language. If she had it in her, it's been adopted and even enabled more, especially this post-merch. She is going to, if she keeps on with that vocabulary, and I guess she will, she's going to be in great trouble at the end.
Yeah, and you talk about cringing at her saying she's not a puppet. I mean, let's talk about the cult, which we saw in this episode. She says to Darrell, if you trust Rob, I trust you. I was like, that was the leader comment to me. That was like, look, if you love leader, I love you. We all love leader, right? So true cult. I mean, she literally says in confessional that she trusts him so much, which is great. Sure, you need trust in the game, but that she's just going to do whatever he says, which kind of sounds like a puppet. And also, even Mike lists all of Rob's lies, you know, what he's worked out about the advantage. I still kind of don't know if he knows the advantage is fake or real, or if he just thinks Rob didn't play his real advantage when he said he would, but he lists stuff about that. He horribly is talking to Nicole and Darrell about how they were all left out of the Maba vote, which we know that they weren't. Like, he was complaining about all of these lies to two people who've been long-term consistently lying to him and were lying to him in that moment, which was painful to watch. And as he talks about everything Rob has done, he says, I'm not saying we should go against Rob. I'm just saying we should be aware. I'm like, oh my God, this is like such a cult right now.
Yeah, and that's the most anti-Rob thing we've heard in like 2 weeks, and that is even still like, well, we shouldn't vote against Rob, but I think we might want to be a little wary of what he's saying. It's just, it's tough, and I feel for Mike, where I think the crux of Mike's game just comes down to the fact that I think he put trust in the wrong people, and I think he thought he had, like, you know, he was speaking with peers when he was talking with Nicole and Darrell, when essentially they thought they were in the inner circle. And he was just sorely mistaken as to how his messaging was coming across.
Shan, are you saying that as a compromise when you mention the cult, the fact that these people are falling in line under Rob's, let's say, leadership, even though they're on a different idol, surely that's a great compliment to how organizing.
I mean, he's already won the chizzy. I think it's incredible what I'm witnessing of someone who's literally just like brainwashed a bunch of people on an island, and we're watching it. I mean, I honestly think that's incredible when people, all of their connections, you know, I mean, we're definitely like Nicole to a Darrell, for example, and, you know, at other times through a Mike, and the connections he's had through the post-merge have really been through Rob. Now we kind of see the three women coming together, but a lot of the time everyone's been oscillating around him. But look, these three women are coming for him, I think. Nicole, we can talk about, she's more of a maybe. I mean, Verna, he's going to the final five, and he's in your spot right now. And we have to ask what he can do.
Like,
he has an idol, but he has at least two people who want him out. Actually, maybe three or four at this point. And I was actually thinking about the two final fives, and I feel like it really correlates. Like, in terms of your relationship to your allies and fellow castaways and Rob's relationships, because you've got you're the center person. Then Nicole is Tom, you know, your main ally who you don't want to turn on you, and that's pretty crucial. Then you've got Steffi as Katinka, your former ally who you know wants to turn on you at a point, or who does want to turn on you at a point, with someone who wasn't in your final three plans. That's Annalise and Letitia. And then you have Darrell and Jean, who are on the bottom, but who might be crucial to your game. So I'm like, maybe Rob should save Darrell next week, idle out Steffi. That's the complete correlation in the Werner move.
I 100% agree with you. And so when Katinka turned on me, we can in a moment maybe say what Rob has to do. I had to send her off with the idol. And then we were four. And in my mind, I really thought Tom and myself, we would stick together. So no one is above the game. And I got screwed there. But I left myself with Jean and Anna, which have not proved themselves in challenges, which might be like Durao and Letitia. At the moment, which they can't win. And myself and Tom, which can win. And if he wins, he takes me. If I win, I take him.
Oh my God, the correlation works so well. I'm so impressed right now.
it works very well. But our thing is here with the next tribal council, with the idols and stuff, if we lose Steffi at final five, I don't know if anyone can beat Rob at final four.
In terms of at a challenge, I mean, Nicole has some chops. The thing is, like, if he doesn't win that challenge, and look, I'm asking you now with like years and months of hindsight, because he isn't the Werner spot. Say he gets to final four with probably the three women, maybe Darrell is in there somehow. I don't know. I think everyone will want to come for him. I mean, we even see in some of the previews on social media that Nicole wants him to not play his idol next week. So maybe she is even coming for him. I would probably guess she is based on that quote. What's he doing it for? How is this possible at four that without winning he gets through this?
If Rob does not win immunity at final four, he goes home.
There has to be a way. Like, there has to be something. What is it? Like, is it doing what you do? Is it trying to keep Darrell? Will Darrell not have the killer instinct that Jean had? And will Darrell help him get to fire if he reaffirms that trust with Darrell, plays an idol on him, idols out Steffi? You gotta hope Letitia doesn't play her idol on Steffi, but that would be putting a lot on Letitia. So it would probably work out if they're going for Darrell, thinking he's like the only person not immune, and if he really is the next person on the chopping block. I think Darrell could be the key and not going to the end with Saula. But I don't know if Rob knows how crucial that is or if the women are coming for him. And then,
yeah, that's the thing.
They're even trying to target him at five with an idol. So we'll have to talk about that as well. But I do think if he can somehow get to four with Darrell instead of Steffi, that's a really good bet for him.
But it all comes down to how much he suspects her. I mean, I know that we said us knowing all the information, sending Nicole to iOS was great instead of Steffi, because Steffi's the one that's been really planning against him. Even though, again, it's crazy that Nicole is his number one ally, considering she voted out his number one ally and then lied about it. It's bananas, but that's Survivor South Africa for you. I think that from what we've seen, I can't remember the past couple episodes specifically, but I feel like Rob doesn't necessarily know that Steffi's onto him. I mean, the only reason why he had Darrell and Mike pile the votes onto Steffi last time was to bring those three targets down to two. And so he had all intentions to play the idol on Steffi.
Yeah, Steffi did not Josh like or the get idol. That.
Yeah, so but it's so interesting. I mean, we'll see maybe next time, again, on that aforementioned preview, he does say that, like, you know, usually I feel very safe and comfortable in this game. I'm not sure. We do see a pact that the four of them make to not play their idols. So I wonder if it's a thing of like when one idol comes out, he's going to use his. It's going to be very, very tricky. He does have some ability. Like you said, Werner, I think the genius in your move at Final Five last time was everyone knew you had the idols. So you were pretty much guaranteed safe, where you knew that there were no votes coming your way anyway. And so you could use it to, you know, shake up the game a bit more, play it on Jean, and which really just, you know, does so many different things from her perspective, from your perspective, from the jury's perspective. I wonder if, considering how everyone knows about Rob's idol, at least of those that are left in the game, if he can do something similar, or if he's going to be a bit more self-preservationist, which he should be, considering that people are coming after him a lot more than they were coming after you at the final five.
Yes. Rob might want, he would be able to do exactly the same, in a sense, by telling Steph, I am going to play my idol for you to show you I've got your back. Because how I would think if I was Rob is, if I can go to Final Four with Steffi and we are together, that gives us a 50% chance for one of us to take the final immunity. Or at least to show a great deal of almost like friendship towards Steffi by playing the idol for her and getting rid of Darrell, or even the other way around. Just to show someone, listen, I am investing in you, taking to the end. Whether it pays off, you don't know. It's funny, in that question Tony asked about loved ones and taking Jean, I knew there was no chance that Jean would allow me to go to the final with her. Even as friends, even when I played that idol, I never thought, she's too much of a fan. She was always going to get rid of me if she had the chance. I just had to bargain on beating her, and I couldn't. I think Rob might pull off a similar move if he wants to. What do you think, Ashan?
I just think that Steffi's the worst person in the game for Rob right now. Like, she has the best chance of winning immunity over him, I think. She seems to want him out. She's so mad about the votes that she got. She doesn't seem to understand that Rob was trying to help her. He was trying to help her. And, like, Steffi, there is no middle ground for Steffi between, like, we're good friends and we're now at war. So she's, like, in a silent war with Rob. She's coming for him. She's leading it. You know, she wants to take him out at five. It's whether he can read that. And I think if he had all the information, he would be like, okay, I need to use my idol in some way to get Steffi out at five. But then it's like, you still had Tom's loyalty at five, and Tom came to you and you had information to use your idol really transparently and to use it really well with all the correct information to obviously save Jean. But no one's feeding that information right now to Rob. I mean, Nicole may have turned because she doesn't seem to have said anything to him. And if she did, then I feel like he could make the move that you did. He really needs that information, and I'm scared that he doesn't have that. But, I mean, you used your idol amazingly well. You got implicit immunity, which is something I've been talking about in International Survivor this week, by saying you were definitely going to play it, and then you could make your creative move. They still want to vote out Rob, and I honestly, from the previews, I refuse to believe that one of the best players I've ever seen is going to make a stupider decision than Chris Noble. Like, Chris Noble at least had two tribal councils to play his idol when he was voted out with it. If they are coming for Rob, and he can't read that, and he doesn't play his idol for some reason, at the final time he can play it, then, I mean, it would be worse than Chris Noble. I refuse to believe that that's something that's happening. I don't buy it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I would say, I don't know. Chris Noble's pretty good person. Henry's another good one, too, of, like, someone who knows they are on the chopping block. Someone literally tells them, play your idol, and yet they still decide not to. I'm very skeptical. As much as I, you know, am all behind Mnet trying to build up suspense, I feel like this all-female final three is not exactly going to happen. Though, I mean, I'm hoping that, you know, Rob plays his idol on somebody else, just because I personally would not want that Darrow advantage get in that Shane, it's happening, out there in
Mike.
The world.
Well, I didn't manifest it. I mean, it happened months ago. It's probably going to happen. I know, because so on Twitter, I said that I would laugh at it, like how Mike laughed at Malcolm going home in Game Changers, and I've held this grudge against him for years, and like it really affects our relationship. So I felt like maybe Mike deserves Darrow get in. But I also don't want Darrow to be advantage get in doubt, because that's like a very sad story.
Yeah, and like I feel like that's not the path for Darrow. You know, like I feel like that is not it. Maybe that is the most Darrow way to go. Out.
Like that's peak Darrow.
It would be very weird to me, and I'd be intrigued to see how production also reacts to there being three idols in the final five, as opposed to Werner, you had one idol and one extra vote, which made things a very, very different situation. But I would also love to get your opinion on Letitia. And we praised her, Shannon, last week for being like, great, you found your idol. Don't tell anybody because they're going to make you flush it. And she decides, hey, we're all in a good mood. And look, I'm on my way out anyway. You know, the Grim Reaper's coming for me after this game. I might as well tell everyone that I have an idol, and Steffi is pretty pissed off.
Put it in my will. My
last will and Ted. Leandra, you're getting my idol if I don't use it. What did you
think?
She
won't even get to use it. She was not making it to that final five tribal council. That's in a couple of days.
Well, as someone who, you know, also might have brokered some stuff with their own idol, what did you think about Letitia deciding to reveal her idol this episode and the effect it might have on that Rob plan we just spoke about?
Oh, it was such a bad decision.
I'm telling you, she was drinking wine. She was. It's just because she was drunk. I think that's what happened.
Yeah, and she had dry breakings. Did you pick up the word? Especially you, Mike, that's not from South Africa. You could say, what's a braai without braai breakies? Right?
Yeah.
So it's toasted sandwiches.
I was wondering where those came from. I mean, yeah. She burned the crap out of them, so I don't know if you like it that way in South Africa.
Yes. I'm telling you that they closed in on the burned toasties or whatever it's called in South Africa, and it was because it was like a metaphor for her game. It was like she told them about the idol, and then she burned the toasties, and they were like, these toasties are her game. She just burned her whole game. That's the metaphor I took from it.
And those toasties, bride roikies, or a direct translation might be barbecue toasties. Awful. All right, they're like super tasty.
Oh, that sounds they're great. Terrible.
They make them with tomato, cheese, and onion. Tomato, cheese, and onion, amazing. It's really amazing. And then you add meat on that grill before you have them on there, so you've got like a meat. Not for you, Shan, but you won't like it. But it's amazing. It's very flavorful. But yeah, you know what? She just played straight into Rob Vance. He's got more information. If he did not know about her idol, he might wanted to pile some votes on her the next tribal council because she's not winning immunity. But now he knows, don't pile votes on Letitia. So they're just making the target clearer and clearer for Rob. Yeah, it's a bad move.
I
don't have anything more to say about that except...
This is what drunk Letitia is. She spills secrets. You would drink too if like your death day was coming in the next week. You know, like it's a hard position to be in when you're 58. It's just like it's coming so soon. So, I mean, the thing that really got to me about all this is, look, Steffi chastises her for the move, which is, you know, it was a bad drunken move. She's like Tom now making bad drunken moves. But do you remember what Steffi was demonizing Jacques for a few episodes ago? It was for not telling people about his idol, and now she's like, Letitia. And, like, I get hypocrisy in the game makes sense, because, like, it's a game, but, like, she really did seem offended about Jacques' idol. That's why the moralizing, the hypocrisy doesn't really work for me. And also, so Steffi's lie about the loved one is now, like, worse in hindsight. I want to ask you, Verna, because, like, I realized this halfway through the episode before Steffi actually articulated it herself. And she said that she had found out there would be a loved one's reward, and that's what she found on Island of Secrets, but she didn't want to spoil the surprise. I don't really know how that protected against this. But wouldn't the other loved ones know that Gina had gone to spend the day with Steffi? Like, from your wife, is that kind of the makeup of where the loved ones are, that they would know that and be able to out that in the game?
Unless, because they didn't have the special Island of Secret event that Steffi enjoyed with us, where there was a loved one that came out a day earlier. But our loved ones traveled together.
Yeah.
They knew one another's name. They knew all about us playing. They were all out in the same hotel. So unless they did with the loved ones what they actually did with the players in separating them, I don't think they'll go to that admin. If I was Steffi, I'd just say, listen, I got to meet my loved one. And you know what, guys? You can be very excited because you're about to see them. Be the carrier of good news. Because it just gives people a good feeling about you. It disarms all the suspicion. Tells them tomorrow you want to see your loved ones. Let them cry and love you and hug you because you are telling them nice stuff. And then there's nothing more about it.
Yeah, I think having the logic of I didn't want to surprise you was the worst logic she could have ever applied to this, of like, you're not planning a surprise party, you're playing Survivor. I think if I were someone who was like, okay, one of my allies didn't want to tell me about something to quote unquote surprise me, what does that mean later on? It just, and then for her to say like, yeah, I lied before. I mean, she definitely opens the door there for saying like, if she lied about that, is she lying once more? It's just so strange that, and
yeah,
and so is that, that's a little unexplained as well, like why she wasn't emotional approaching Gina, you know?
Because Gina's just a very close friend.
Yeah, but also at the same time, was it that she had emotionally steeled herself for 2 days knowing that Gina was going out there to the island, that by the time she got out there, she's like, yeah, cool, whatever. That's the reason why she wasn't as like over the moon as, and I guess it's her best friend as opposed to like parents and you know, spouses and children, yeah, and such. But it's just it's so unnecessary on top of the unnecessary that was last week. It's just, I don't know. The lies on Island of Secrets. I'm sad that we're probably only going to get one more visit next week, because that only provides one more opportunity for someone to just completely screw up a secret and just have calamity ensue.
Why did her cover up even like work at all when she said that she found out about Island of Secrets and she didn't want to ruin the surprise because she didn't want the loved ones to out her? Why wasn't, like, you know, Letitia's daughter just like, wait, Gina, didn't you go to the Island of Secrets? Like, you left for an entire day and you went to the Island of Secrets. Like, how did that not, you know, how did that not come out? And like, look, maybe they said, you know, Gina has to go do something, or they made an excuse for her and didn't tell the loved ones, which would make sense. But like, when Steffi's making up the lies, she can't possibly know that. So it's not about, you know, kind of the result of it. It's just kind of the intention to just kind of heap that on to why last week's lie was so unnecessary, even more so. And I mean, look, Steffi in this episode, a couple of other things while we're talking about her, she said in her voting confessional that Mike's social game failed. And like, look, in this episode, she went to confessional and talked about how she wants to make people cry. That was the, in talking about the social game, the awareness might be off from Steffi.
Yeah.
Yes. So, I would like to just say that I enjoyed Steffi the last episode, her almost coming to terms of, you know, after her name coming up, knowing, recognizing that it's Rob pulling the strings. I actually enjoy this.
Gina recognized it. Of a game. But yeah.
Well, Gina, sorry, like you said, Gina won the chizzy.
No, we don't do that here.
Okay. But in true Steffi style, she stands in a confessional the day after. She's like, who made Rob the manager of writing down names?
You did! You did!
For like weeks now, like literally since day one.
And then she goes to Letitia, and she, and I'm actually enjoying her, just not to insult her. When she's sitting down with Letitia, she says, she doesn't say, you know, Letitia, do you think you maybe should have shared with Rob about the idol? She says, you made a big mistake now. Something like that. She just gets in there and tells Letitia straight, you messed up.
Yeah, does she have to do that in front of Letitia's kid on the last time they're ever going to see each other? Like, it's so rude. This is an important day.
By the way, Leandra, your mom sucks at this game. And let me explain why. It's so interesting, though, because from the internet community perspective, and I don't want to mention the word again since we've had Liana Boris on, but it's a little Big Brother-esque where, in this most recent season, there was someone who a lot of people did not like, who is now turning against, you know, one of the people who's really been running the game. And now people are sort of like flocking their support behind them. I don't know. I've seen an uptick in Steffi's popularity, even though, like you said, she's still Steffi at the end of the day. I think the fact that she is the voice of dissent in Rob's face, again, I'm skeptical as to whether or not it's actually going to happen. But I think the fact that she has come wise to it has, oddly enough, endeared herself to a lot of people, as opposed to some others like Nicole, who is, you know, resolute in where she's going, or someone like Durao, who is still like, okay, I know I'm not in this alliance, but if I vote with the alliance, I think everything's going to be okay.
The fact that in his voting confessional, he was still like, Steffi, I hope you go home. Like, dude, no.
I've got something to ask. Maybe a comment. Or if we can think of one or two players, that would be great. I'm speaking with my wife, and we're talking about this idea of in Survivor. It actually reflects something of real life as well, and that is, you always find out stuff when it's too late, right? Everyone sitting on that jury, I mean, the amount of times they would have this conversation at Ponderosa. If we can only go back to Final 11. If we can only go back, Corbis, Mike, Jacques, Dante, they would say, oh, we could kick ourselves. it's the same story every time, right? Because it's the story of our lives. We always react to something. But every now and then, you get a player who gets this early enough. And those are the exceptional players.
Mm.
It's when you are robbed, obviously, you should not awake to anything because you are the only one running the show, right? When you are the Boston Rob, you don't need that revelation that you need to do something because you are the one blinding the rest. But it takes a great player in a group of six, which sits very comfortable, to actually click, this is not going to end well. I'm going to have to go to those other four people and drag someone over and flip this game. And I can't come up out of my mind with some great examples, but those are your great social players that realizes their hierarchy early enough to actually change the game up.
Yeah, I mean, my first example would be our great cult leader, Rob Cestanino. I mean, Alex literally told him that he was going to vote for him at four. So he did have a leg up on that. But yeah, I mean, it is a really hard thing. I think that's why I say that read is the most important part of the game. And people who have a fantastic read are going to be the best players. Like, I love Mike. And I think that he was such a fun person to watch. I have such a soft spot in my heart for him. I think he's a good soul. But his game was damned by the fact that he read the situation wrong. If he'd read it correctly, he should have been making moves genuinely at the merge. Like, that's how locked in Saula were with their numbers. And like, it's bad on Mike, but it's also credit to Rob that he brought in so many of the loose change players himself. Like, he was the one collecting change. And these people didn't want to make the move. And that's what screwed the entire game. And that's what it'll do. If you have the wrong read, you literally can't play the game. You're playing a different game than what's actually happening. So it's not going to go well for you.
Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned Survivor War Cases before. That was the whole flip on the road to four was them realizing very blatantly as well, oh, we're going to be, you know, six and fifth. If we end up continuing, let's make this move now. You know, we see, I feel like there's a lot of stuff in Australian Survivor as well, where we have these big players going out like second or third juror, where they're like, oh, yeah, it's time to flip the game right now. I'm not entirely sure, like, if there's a common denominator between them. I think it's just a matter of the person who's in control doing a great job of keeping the wool over people's eyes of like, hey, you could flip and join these people, but we're in tight. Why would you want to jeopardize your position? I mean, it's always a game of positioning, right? It's would you want to flip from a guaranteed spot in the final three to being fifth or sixth in another alliance? And I think that what Rob has done a really nice job of doing in particular is convincing people of like, I'm on your side. We're going to work together. And then once we get to the end, we'll fight it out and see what happens. That really kept people in that initial stage of the post-merge from joining your Merrills and your Dantes and Jeffs until it was too late. And now look where we are.
Yeah. And look at, if we take Survivor Australia as an example again, it's someone like Dave. Am I allowed to give spoiler here?
Yeah. I mean, guys, keep up to date on International Survivor. Okay. Or skip ahead 30 seconds, but watch 17 episodes of the show, okay?
Yeah. You've got the champions, you've got the godmother and the gang saying, let's get rid of Dave. Him and Luke are becoming incredibly close and powerful. And then, boom, just a little bit of a shake up, just keeping everyone on their toes. Boom, send Dave home. Massive blindside, goes with an idol, great play, but once again, an exceptional player. You know, some of those champion girls, they're really good. And they are quite aware of what's going on. But then on the other side, you've got Rob, which is quite unlike Dave. I'm not saying Dave was in the Rob spot, but let's say for a moment, Dave was quite flashy, he was kind of in control. All right. And the same with Rob actually deals with humans in a much more humble way. He's kind to people. He goes and sits with them. He acknowledges them. And that keeps people blind for longer. Whereas, you know, when Dave parades up and down and gives, you know, he comes to the three champion goals and says, listen, we're going to do this. It irritates them because they're picking up that he thinks at least he's in charge. And Rob is hiding that away in a better way, which is kudos to him. Great social game. But then on the other side, the voice against Rob was Dante. And no one wants to listen to Dante. So you've got someone actually recognizing the truth, shouting the right thing, but the person through which the words come is disqualifies the words itself. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The joke, it's almost like Tony at one sense with us. At one sense, I mean, she was really starting to fight for a place in the game. It doesn't matter what she said, people would just block it out in those last few days. And I think in one sense, Dante was right, but yeah, wrong person.
Yeah, we said for ages Dante was right. Like, Dante is the person screaming that the apocalypse is coming, but you think that's a crazy person. But then the apocalypse comes. Like, Dante was right, but no one wanted to listen to him. But I do think that Dave is not Rob. I mean, maybe Janine is more the Rob. Dave, to me, is the Sipe.
Yeah, right.
You know, like, Sipe went in the same blind side at the same spot. And I think that probably gave some of these loose change players extreme hope. Mostly Mike. I mean, look at Mike's reaction when Rob told him about the Sipe boot. He probably thought, oh my God, I've been like grinding to get into this alliance, working my way up slowly, and here is the big break, and now we're going to play some game. But actually, it just went back to the status quo. But I do think that Sipe boot probably gave people a little bit of hope. I mean, Sipe was integral to what might be the final three of the season. She was Saula strong. I mean, well, she should have been Saula strong. She wasn't really going with the Saula thing. That's what damned her. But from everyone else's perspective, those were the four Saulas, and Sipe was blindsided, and it was the only real shakeup of this pogonging. But I can imagine that if you're a desperate loose change player kind of hanging on to Rob, and you see him vote out a core member, you're thinking, oh, I've just worked my way up, and the game's more fluid, and I have more room to move, but they actually really did not.
Yeah, I really liked, I mean, now looking back, I know that we had some trepidation about Rob doing this so early on, but like you said, it was so great in setting up this hope for those that might be on the bottom. And I can assume, Werner, you can probably attest to this, of like being a fan of the game. If someone goes up to you and says, like, want to make a move, that probably excites you to no end after being out there on an island for such a long amount of time and wanting to actually play Survivor. So I think he was really able to like endear himself to people. And I really think that how Rob is able to have done so, so well in this game up to this point is just the calm, rational way he's approached these relationships. Because the difference between him and Dave as well is that Dave was so transparent in his seediness, where everyone knew when he was approaching them, like, yeah, you're telling me one thing, but out of the other end of your mouth, you're talking to somebody all the way at the other end of the beach. I think what people felt about Rob is that they thought he was genuinely making one-on-one connections with them. And again, it remains to be seen as to whether those connections are going to bite him in the butt. But so far, so good in terms of Rob just making such solid relationships with people that they want to work with him. They want to believe that working with him is going to better their game, even if it's only pushing forward his ultimate end game that doesn't involve them.
Yeah, and here's the thing, what's going to happen, and this is what I fear for Nicole, unless something changes, is let's say the two of them get to the end, both Rob and Nicole. I think that if we go on what we're seeing right now, is that Nicole might say, I was right, you were wrong, therefore you had to go. You lied, I did not lie, so therefore give me a vote. Whereas Rob, I think, and I hope, because this is where you can mess it up, I think Rob's going to say, listen, I really enjoyed you out there. We really became friends. And I did lie to you because we are playing Survivor. You were playing great. And I'm sorry I got rid of you. Please award me for playing this game. And I unfortunately had to play it against you as well. And I think that's the difference between the two, which might just give him a flush of votes. He'll take everything.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised that you say, Mike, that you're seeing comments kind of rallying behind Steffi. I feel like I haven't seen that. I'm seeing a lot of, I know it's a boring outcome, but Rob has to win this. Werner, you would have been the boring outcome too, but I think a lot of people also had the same thing where they wanted you to win it. But like, your season was crazy, and Tom is an insane winner to have for that season. But the season has not been crazy. The season has been like, you know, a slower build and definitely a lot more serious. And it's the Rob show. Like, it's his story. And I feel like I need to see him win it. You know, obviously Final Four, that's a really dicey situation for him. I don't really know how he's going to get through that, but possibly immunity. And we do know that if someone sticks with him, maybe a Doral, if he gets him there, maybe Nicole is going to stick with him. He is, remember, the fire person. He has been the entire time. And that's been foreshadowed.
I think if he gets to the final four with Dural, he has a spot in the final three. I'll just declare it right now, because there's Dural,
get in.
I mean, it could be a thing where, like, he is an observant person. Maybe he'll pick something up knowing this cast. Maybe someone will flat out tell him that the women are voting against him, in which case he'll be able to save Dural, you know, keep his puppy in his on the leash so that that puppy is going to take him into the final three. And then from then on, I don't know. It's going to be very interesting. I think these are the two diciest rounds for Rob ever.
He has an idol next week.
Yeah, but it's all been building
and still,
to this.
And then still it's died. Yeah, it's true. It's like, Rob made a slight faux pas in this tribal council. He was immune with an idol. Like, you know, like, even when you're saying slight, you know, mishaps in his game, there's just so much power and control there. But I think four's the problem. I mean, it's the exact same vote if he keeps the row around next week as what Werner had. And we came on and we were like, oh my God, like, Werner's won the game, but we didn't account for the fact that, you know, everyone would turn on him at four. Maybe, you know, and probably Dural and Nicole and all the people who've been loyal to him are just going to turn on him anyway. That's what we've been saying the whole time, because we saw it literally last season. So I do think so dicey. I think it's just going to have to come down to immunity. I guess that might just be it.
Yeah, I think so. I just want to say that, can I ask you guys this? Just with regards to the season, we're talking about the Rob show. With the episode where Jean got alienated and all the stuff that happened there with the moral high ground and stuff, does that steal from the enjoyment of the show for you guys personally? Seeing those kind of themes play of on a Survivor season?
For me, yeah, a little. I mean, it's hard. I love Jacques. I didn't want to watch him go through that. And for the part of me is like so angry, obviously, for people who listen to the podcast I did after that episode. And then, you know, part of me is happy to feel extreme emotion about TV. Survivor should make me feel things, but I don't know if it should make me feel that. I don't know if I should be that mad about something that bad. And one of the things I'm loving about Australian Survivor right now, and I mean, this is extremely intriguing, don't get me wrong, but Australian Survivor is like the other end of the coin where people go to Jury Villa and they're like, so there's no bad blood and everyone's so much fun. And it's just like, wow, this was really the game. And this to me in waves felt beyond the game because it felt really, really, really personal. And there's definite interest to that. I mean, Survivor South Pacific, for example, where it became all about like religion, for example, was kind of ugly to watch, but also incredibly fascinating about this kind of cult that was forming. Can things be fascinating, but also like, I don't like, I'm not loving it. I think that might have been what that was.
That's what I said in the beginning of that podcast was I was frustrated. I was both frustrated.
It's a horrible
and
word.
Fascinated.
It's really not going to happen.
But rather than I don't know, frustrated.
You know, those two words just maybe aren't meant to be joined. Maybe we just keep them
apart. Perhaps uncoupled them. They're no longer loved ones. I think it's a thing where it's an unfortunate underbelly that happens when you build a society, to your point, Werner, but it doesn't make it necessarily that much fun to watch. I think the thing is, and we talked about this in our podcast as well, is that I do feel like Rob got a bit unfairly lumped in with the way that the Steffies and Nicoles and Letitias were feeling, where he was very clear in his confessionals how the way he was treating Jacques was very strategic, whereas it feels like the other people was more emotional and definitely more moralistic. I mean, Nicole called it. Thank God everyone stayed on their moral high ground and decided to vote off Jacques, which is just like an absolutely bananas comment. Whereas I think Rob established like, it's not that bad, but you know what? I can use it as an opportunity to, you know, the prevailing theme of this season is when a common enemy is a fantastic uniter. And unfortunately, I think Rob is now becoming the common enemy that he's been speaking so much about next round. But I think he saw it as a good opportunity, whereas I think he's been sort of lumped in with your Steffies and your Nicoles, who took it much more personally and decided to really just bury him in the ground. Though I will also say, Jacques did say in his Ponderosa that after the comment, Rob was like smashing coconuts and things for hours afterwards. So maybe his reaction was more emotional than he initially put on.
Yeah,
for me, I don't mind seeing these kind of things on Survivor because it happens in real life.
Right.
And having it on the screen gives a community the opportunity These things go full circle. Like you said, Steffi, like Jorg, you were lying to us about the idol, and then Steffi, she knew about her visit. So this whole cycle just went very short. So someone can actually tell Steffi, can you see that this comes across like hypocritically, you know? And for us to shun these kind of things under the mat, I don't think that helps. I'm glad Survivor South Africa showed it, because they could maybe in one way try to downplay it. It's hard. It was quite a solid theme, though. But I'm glad they show it so that we can talk about it. You know, about these things happen out there. But, and I just wanted to get your take. But when it comes to the strategic side, I agree. Let's say someone says a word and I'm not offended by it. I hear it on the rugby field every year 100 times. But I see the majority of people are offended by it. I'll say, ooh, can you believe what he just said? No, we must vote him off. So use it as strategy.
Yeah. I'm glad they showed it. I'm happy that it happens. But as you said, it does happen. Good to shine a light on it. I'm just sad that that's the world. I don't want that.
And there's also been some problems as well, where I think, to your point, Werner, there were people like Mike and Maba, who I think sort of joined in on it, and people were, in my opinion, unfairly going after them, being like, why didn't you speak up and do this? And as bad as it is, I do feel like, as to a certain point, you know, certain people might not want to jeopardize their game position in lieu of doing the quote unquote right thing. If you know that stepping out of line with this big alliance is going to put a big target on you, unfortunately, as much as you might as a person want to be kind to Jacques, sometimes it's not the right thing to do, and it's super sad and it's frustrating. I wonder if another thing compounded on top of it is that I think maybe if Jacques had ultimately gone on to be this big underdog story and win the game, it might validate or help, you know, remove the bitter aftertaste of those scenes. But because Jacques was so piled up on that he ended up getting voted out the next episode, that just really said, okay, Jacques, you know, these people did not get their comeuppance necessarily in that Jacques did not beat them.
Yeah. And I hope these kind of situations propel Survivor South Africa into the new age of Survivor US, where people can just play the game for the game. Because the reason Jacques was alienated is because a lot of the people, they feel guilty for playing the game. Now they're looking for reasons. They must now make a moral, legitimate case for voting a person off. You don't have to do that. Just play the game. Just vote someone off because they're not on your team. Make a move against them and tell them, I voted you off because I want to outplay you. Go to the jury and then vote for me at the end. You don't have to, in one way, make up reasons why you are allowed to vote someone off. You guys get that, man?
Yeah, but the thing is, not everyone is a super fan who realizes that. And I also kind of like that everyone comes at it from a different perspective, because that's what makes the game really dynamic and diverse, in that if you were playing the whole game with, you know, 20 Uverners, then you would play it and it would be very neat and tidy. And like, sometimes that is the culture of the season, like I said, what's happening on Australian Survivor right now. But Jacques goes out there like you did, being like, it's a game, I'll make my moves. Like, even the fact that he went out with such a smile when he had the most personal things happen against him, but he has to work against people he'd never meet in real life, people who don't know the show as well as him, people who he might not have expected. And those are personalities you need to manage in the game that are really, really difficult. And that's like, that's part of the whole game.
Yeah, I always believe that Survivor is a game of a limited number of moves made with an infinite number of personalities. And you can certainly, I mean, what Jacques said could totally play well with the cast of Survivor Millennials versus Gen X, but it didn't play well here. And it's sort of a matter of, hey, these are the handful of moves I can make in each and every round, but with the personalities around me, what's the best move to make, you know, knowing how each of these personalities is going to react? And I'm assuming it's simultaneously the most satisfying yet frustrating thing to deal with when you're out there on the island, especially as a big fan of the game.
And speaking about, you know, another obviously big fan of the game, I kind of wanted to give a final few words for Mike. As I've said, big soft spot for
Shannon,
him.
Shannon, I told you I'm only 30. I'm not dying yet.
Yes, you are. That's the new 58, which is the new 100, apparently. My two favorite Mikes gone so soon. But no, he was so much fun to have on the show. Like, just in terms of, you know, obviously being someone I was drawn to for his empathy and his kindness, I love seeing that And I kind of love that he went out with a smile on his face and that it kind of brought some levity to what's been a heavy couple of episodes of Tribal Council through Mike's kind of like enthusiasm for the realizations he was having. Maybe enthusiasm is the wrong word, but it was certainly animated. And Darrow not realizing what was happening, it was so funny. And I was like, damn, I missed this. I miss laughing at these people. So, you know, that was great as well. And, you know, I talk about it. He was 21. He's the youngest person on the cast by so many years, to the point where at Jury Villa, they're debating whether he lied about being 21. Like, that's crazy. That's how mature he was. So, Mike, do you have any final words for your namesake?
Yeah, the age thing is really interesting. And I when I throw it to Werner, I definitely want to get your thoughts on the comparisons between him and Katinka and how age...
I just wanted to ask.
Yeah, because I was going to say...
I just wanted to ask the same thing.
Yeah, because I think age, unfortunately, here might have influenced naivete, where Mike is such a lovely person, but I wonder if he was a bit too wide-eyed when it came to seeing these relationships at face value. And look, it sort of cut both ways in that people loved him as they were leaving the game just because they said, you know, he was a nice guy. He looked genuinely upset when he had to vote out Jeff. But at the same time, it did allow him to be easily taken advantage of by somebody like Rob, to the point where, you know, Nicole had him completely under that he thought she was working with him for the entire post-merge until she had to reveal in this tribal council that he wasn't. I thought he was a really fun personality. I'm still intrigued as to why he was so anti-Rocco in those first few episodes.
He should have worked with Rocco. That's the whole point.
Yeah, he did get his revenge later on, and I'm sure we'll talk to him at some point about how that influenced the rest of the game. But I mean, I cannot say enough about just how kind this guy is and how I think from a philosophy perspective, he really is wise beyond his years. I still love that quote he has about how you should just be kind because there's so much terrible stuff going out there in the world. You know, how is it going to hurt you to just be a little kind to people, and how that really does encapsulate the Survivor social game to a certain aspect and really endeared himself to people where if he didn't make it to the end, I think he had a pretty damn good shot to win. And that's crazy to say that about a 21-year-old radio presenter. I just think he was unfortunately outfoxed, so he did lead to a great moment where him and Darrow high-fived over the fact that they both got completely screwed. It was just so much fun to watch, but it will be sad to miss him. I'll be intrigued to see what he does as a juror in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I thought he played a great game. He was a little bit young. If he, you know, in a typical American style, would be able to come back in 3 or 4 years' time, he'd be even better. He'd be a good player. And I think the biggest difference between him and Katinka was that Katinka was sitting pretty in a strong alliance. Therefore, Katinka came across a lot more calculated at times, and that because she was, you know, driving the bus, you were us, you know. But for Mike, he was swimming upstream. But both of them were good players, and I take my hat off to Mikey. I think he played a good game, and it'll be great to see if maybe he gets a chance to play again one day.
Yeah, because for me, as an analyst of the show, it kind of hurts my heart that I have to criticize him to say, you were too nice for the game. Like, you were honestly too sweet, too trusting. You know, those are qualities that hurt you in the game. Like, I criticize that, I guess, as a Survivor analyst, but I'm like, as a human being, like, take that going forward, because that's a good thing. And that made us, I think, really love watching on the show. And now a quick break to hear from our sponsors. And we are back. Okay, so the Chizzy continues, even though Rob already won, and Mike was the next active player in the game who had the most points, and now he's gone. Look, he won, but the Chizzy is still important, and we're still going to give our points, so take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3.
Okay, so this week we're still only giving 6 points because we're so far, you know, into the season. So we each have 2 points to give. So you can either split it 1-1 or give your full 2 points. And maybe no surprise, but I'm going to give 2 points to Rob. Again, one thing I didn't get to bring up is Rob's treatment of Darrow just I mean, was amazing start to finish. We've talked about how key it was that Dural was coming back to him with all the secrets through the whole post-merge and the way he pulled him in. But I think one thing that's gone a little missing is no wonder Dural trusted Rob. You know, it's not the same as Mike. Mike and Rob have kind of... Mike hasn't been in Rob's plans for a while. But Dural was in Rob's final five for a good long time. And I think the first time Rob really lied to Dural that we saw was last week, you know, at the final seven. And at that point, Dural... you know, is superfluous because at that point they only need a final four of seven. So I think that was the first time where he said to him, you know, we're going to vote for Steffi next week, which was this week. And he also was like, we're going to split the votes on Steffi and wasn't transparent about what he was trying to do. I mean, it only dawned on me this week that by Dural voting for Steffi so that Rob could protect her, he was really in effect splitting the votes on himself, which is just a crazy move, actually, when you think about it. So his relationship with Dural and the way that he brought him in and then cut the information at just the right time. No wonder Dural believed him. I mean, most of it was true. You're going to trust someone until they don't need you anymore, and they kind of turned that. But how could even anyone see that coming? It's not just Dural's fault. So really amazing. And, you know, some of the things we were talking about earlier, the way that he puts it on Mike, like, you came for me first. That's a Tony move. Like, that's what Tony was trying to do with a lot of the people that oppose him to try and do that. And that's high praise for me to talk Tony.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I love that Dural is Rob's island of secrets, essentially, where he's the one man on this island who's like, hey, here's everything that's going on. I think that in a group that, to the points that we made before, needs quote-unquote reasons for things, I think Rob providing a reason to get rid of Mike is a great idea that also unifies the group. But just to throw some points around, so I'll give one to Rob. I'm going to throw one Nicole's way. Just because I think for a long time we had this common sense of she's drawing dead, and she might still be drawing dead, but I don't know. Mike's comment in his exit interview makes me think that maybe she might stand a slightly better chance than she did before. Maybe the fact that she spoke out against Rob being so upfront with her about what happened on iOS was something that, you know, made the jurors' eyes light up because they're so anti-Rob at this point. I still think it is a long shot, but since Rob already has it won, I figured let me just throw some spare points, some loose change towards some people who I think did some interesting stuff this week. And so let me give it to the puppet collaborator, Nicole, as well.
Yeah, I mean, Nicole for me would be the honorable mention, I think. You know, she has done amazing work that I do think has kind of gone unnoticed just because we've been focusing on that jury thing and how we kind of been feeling that she is drawing dead. But that doesn't change that some things in isolation have been really, really good. The long-term manipulation, as I've said, but I still just kind of worry again about just where the jury sits with her and like however they're, you know, accepting what she was giving to them in this tribal council. I do think that like, I don't know, had the outburst at Rob and calling it the worst day of her life when she's like still in the game and still got to see her loved one when other people didn't, I think still brings that entitled attitude that the jury, you know, might not like it. But like Rob is also the actual cult leader. Like I needed to give 2 points just to be like, you are running a cult. But Werner, who are you giving your 2 points to?
All right, so I'm going to give one to Rob. Great, great game. And the biggest move that takes the point to him is the fact that he shows Mike and the jury that he gives himself consent to vote Mike off because Mike turned on him first, and he verbalized that very well in a dramatic moment. So take your point. I don't want to be controversial. I'm actually going to give this point to Steffi.
Okay.
So why? She is, it's a bit too late, but she is the follower that is being awakened and realized she is in the cult. It's 3 votes too late. But she's the one the viewers are seeing, you know, are standing up and realizing, maybe I need to do something here. And the jury's not like that. If she can pull something out, and I wrote down here, and I commend her for hugging Rob that day after. She's playing him. He says, how's it, Steffi? And she gives him a hug, and then she says, listen, I don't trust this guy. She played it well. And then at the family feast, she's cheering, giving hugs and stuff. But in her heart, she knows she makes a move here. So for the great awakening, I give 1 point.
That sounds like a point to Gina. Like the great awakening was Gina's. It sounds like she's got another chizzy point, which is fitting. Like Gina at this point has been on the island probably for more time than some first boots. She has more chizzy points than, you know, probably other people should have. Well, we're not giving her chizzy points, actually, because as both me and my brother will tell you, we're not making mockery out of the chizzy, but, you know, I see that point, and I see Saula getting the points, because I have to think, like, Rob has run the game, but it is all of Saula now sitting at the final five, you know, when they were going to the first couple of tribal councils. And I think that the way they've been able to work together through all of this, the trust that they must have had in each other through the post-merge, I mean, I think that there's something really to be commended there from all of them, the way that they were playing everyone. I feel like it's definitely Rob first and foremost by a lot, but I do commend Nicole a lot. And to a degree, you know, Steffi's part of that as well, so I do see it.
Yeah, though if you ask Darrell, I don't think he thinks Nicole is part of it. I think he forgot the way the tribes initially broke down.
Yeah. Mike's like, oh, it's Saula. And then Darrell's like, oh, so Nicole's out next. And Mike's like, no, Nicole's in Saula. And he's like, wait, which Saula are we talking about?
I also love Nicole Darrell being like, hey, Letitia, vote with us. And she's like, no, you never asked me before. And he's like, I'm asking now. Vote with us, please.
Oh, my God. Speaking of Doof of the Week.
There's one more thing I wanted to tell you guys before I forget. One of the podcasts you mentioned, are the jury allowed to like say something, or were they allowed to look at them? Or do you guys recall that? I know you do a lot of podcasts.
Yes, it was after Mamba got voted out. Mike and Jeff were sort of having like muted conversations about like what happened. I don't know. We had questioned whether or not that was allowed in terms of jury contestant interaction.
And I will tell you something, LaRue and these guys are really amazing, that's in charge of Survivors of Africa. And one of the things they would do is they will not give us too much rules. You wonder whether you're allowed to do something. And I think it adds to the authenticity of the show, because never do they tell us when you're in the game, you're not allowed to do this or that. I mean, I wonder, for example, let's say I get up out of my seat and walk to the jury. Who's going to stop me?
Think they should be stopping you from doing that.
I think so as well, but it's unfair. You know what I'm saying? So there's a lot of gray area, and I think that whole uncertainty, am I allowed or am I not allowed, actually adds to the authenticity of the show, because you don't always know.
Yeah. I think that's what they often say. They're like, ask for forgiveness, but not permission, and just see what you can get away with. And like, if you can use it to your advantage, I guess do it.
Yeah. We're giving Gina chizzy points, is what you're saying.
No. Well, do you think she can beat Rob at this point? Is she the only one who can take it? Rob has mathematically won like 100 times over. So, Verna, I'm sorry that we didn't do the chizzy last season. I feel like you definitely won retroactively. We should try and get you. We'll talk to Josh Wiggler next week. Try and get you a Wombats visor. I feel like you deserve it.
Just tell me, what is a Wombats visor? I heard about it. I don't know.
Okay, basically, you know, Josh gives out Wombats hats on, you know, for the wand off, and for International Survivor, he's made it Wombats visors because of what Andy was wearing on Australian Survivor. So is Josh actually making these hats? Like, was this a joke, or are we getting, because I've promised Rob a visor.
I'm going to talk about him with that offline, because we have some other merchandise for other podcasts to talk about. But yeah, basically, Werner, you might just be seeing in your mail one day a visor that has Wiggler's Wombats printed on it in brilliant orange font that you can just flaunt about and get, I'm sure, a million questions about.
Beautiful.
The perfect accessory. Well, let's talk about some other things that Werner has won in the Bias Draft Variety Hour. So take it away, Jacob Steger Weinstein and the U.S. Army Blues.
And now it's the BioStrat Variety Hour with your host, Shannon Gates, and also Mike Bloom.
Okay, well, I mean, the first question I have, Verna, is how was the Mahindra car? We know that you have sold it, but I feel like you are the spokesperson for Mahindra here now on the podcast with us.
Actually, a great car. Actually, a great day doing. So Mahindra are known in South Africa almost more in the northern parts than the southern parts, because the head offices are more north. You know, like Gauteng, Mpumalanga, that area. Shannon, you all know.
Mm-hmm.
they're actually traditionally more known for making quite durable what is a bucky? Shannon, you need to help me here with
language. Oh my god, I can't help you. I don't know.
like farm vehicles, like 4x4 vehicles and stuff. It's quite rugged. They're not necessarily great looking, but you can load tons of stuff on them. And they also have big transport stuff. But no, more recently they're pressing into the market, the family market. And so I had actually quite a great vehicle from them. But someone made me a great offer in the car, so I sold it. But I might just get one once a new shape come up or something. They're actually doing well, almost moving from more robust farming vehicles to the family. I think that's what they're pushing through this show the last 2 years. They're quite new in that market. So there's my feedback from Mahindra.
Well, so what were your thoughts then about Rob only getting the car for a month? And is it true or not that you sold the car to Rob because he wanted to get more of it?
Yes, that's exactly what happened.
All that cheesy money.
Rob was the one. Yeah, Rob was the one who bought my car. It's out there in the universe now.
Oh, I love it.
Well, I don't know why they did that. Let me tell you another thing they did, which was interesting. Owen, they actually gave a viewer a vehicle as well last year.
I think they're still doing that this year.
And myself. I'm not sure. I think they are. But they might as well just gave Rob the car to keep for a month. Why?
They give it to the viewers, but not to the players. It does get people, I guess, voting for their favorite, but it still feels like an odd decision. I mean, really feel like they could have parted with a car. And that their tentative connections between the show and their advertising is being stretched so thin. On Twitter, they said, "If Survivor SA has taught us one thing, your circle of trust is the most important thing to your success. Make a day one ally when you drive the Mahindra Karoo DC build to take on anything." How is that an ally? That's a car. You know, cars aren't allies. Terrible marketing.
To be fair, Rob has been working with Nicole and Steffi longer than he's going to have this car for. So I don't know exactly if that day one alliance is working for him and Mahindra.
Yeah, it's only a 30-day alliance. Like, that's going to cut you mid-merge. It's really not that good. But look, the sponsors weren't doing a lot on Twitter this week, which is really disappointing. But I did like that Steers had the best reaction I've seen to the very emotional loved ones visit. They said, "We're not crying. It's just the heat from our hot quarter chicken." Had to work the product in there to the emotional moment. but also not a lot. Cape Union Mart said, "Can't imagine not having a bri for 32 days. Looking forward to seeing this reward." It's like, Cape Union Mart, do you have no heart? It's about the loved ones. Like, they can't believe not having a bri. Like, they haven't seen their loved ones for 32 days.
I think we've confirmed that Darrow's mother runs the Cape Union Mart account.
No. Yeah, it's definitely Darrow. Yeah. I mean, Darrow only thinks about food. He said in this episode when they were fighting about who was the hungriest because Steffi had been taken on the reward for being the hungriest. He was like, "I'm the hungriest all the time," which was really accurate.
Yeah, I'll admit, you know, I was preparing to see, okay, who is the woman who birthed Darrow? I would say by comparison, you know, she was not, it's not nearly as a moment as who married Tom, but it was still fun to meet Darrow's mother, specifically when he's, you know, grabbing the sandbag. He's like, "No, mommy, I've got it." It's just weird to have someone call someone mommy out during a loved one's challenge.
I love Darrow so much.
So Shannon, for you, the bride would not look appetizing, right? Because you don't eat meat.
No, I miss meat. I look good. I just don't eat meat, but I can appreciate a good looking piece of meat.
But Mike, do you guys make meat over open fire in America ever? I mean, does that look, did the reward look appetizing to you at all?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, there's been a slew of Survivor barbecue rewards, and it felt like it was very comparative. Granted, we did not get the delicious burnt cheese sandwiches with them like they did, but I think that people would freak out for a barbecue. I mean, Survivor Karamoan, they had a big barbecue right out on the barge with all the loved ones. So I think it's a little comparable, but my mouth was watering. In addition to, I'll admit, my eyes watered a bit as a new father to see Mike's father come out there. I don't know. It felt if I ever had a slip in my judgment and let my son go out to play Survivor years from now, I sort of put myself in poor Wade's place, and it was really delightful to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't it Cochran's dad that was running that barbecue show?
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, "Yo, my dad pretends like he's knowing what he's doing out here, but he may have a barbecue at home. Now he's turning the patties, looking in control," something like that.
You know, well, he did better than Drunk Letitia, I have to say. But, you know, we've actually gotten to most of the questions, so I only have one here, but it's so fitting and so perfect. Vince Malazzo asks, is there any possibility that Doral has kept his fake idol a secret and used it to bluff his way into the final four, over or under a 1% shot? We've got three people with idols. Someone's going to win immunity. But let's remember, Doral has his fake idol. What's he going to do with it?
It's going to be like, Doral's going to be like, "Oh, I have this fake idol." And Rob's like, "Oh, can I inspect it?" And Doral says, "Sure," and gives it to him. And Rob's like, "Okay, I'm not giving it back." And then that's the end of the conversation. Or like, Doral, while getting up to play, is going to like bumble it and it fall into the fire. You know, like there has to be... Like the he cannot bluff. This is Doral. I think even some of the best players at this point could do it. Like, it's very comparable to like when Kelly Wentworth gave the fake idol to Keith at the final five of Survivor Cambodia. Like, I think if it was in her hands, she could have done a better job of doing it than Keith really trying to play up that he had a fake idol. I trust maybe anybody else in the game besides Doral to play up the fact that he has an idol, just because. I mean, they said in Ponderosa, they're like, "Oh yeah, is that Doral's fake idol? Everyone knows about this thing." I think he might have even lost it at this point. I don't know how he hung on to it for like 20 something days.
Yeah, I have to think that Doral's fake idol has a shorter lifespan than like Letitia. You know, like there's no way. Have we made too many Letitia death jokes in this podcast? Did I hit the note too hard? I really just thought it was funny. I don't think Letitia is going to die soon. I just want to put that disclaimer out there, unless people think I'm being serious. But Verna, what do you think? Is Doral the secret mastermind using his fake idol to prevent Doral getting?
Oh, yeah, that I hope he comes of a thing. That's my hope. My hope is he wears it around his neck. He speaks about it at least for 10 minutes of the 15-minute episode and at tribal council, that he will still push the envelope, that this is a real idol. I'm buying that.
There's a non-zero chance that he has eaten the idol at this point. I'm just putting that out there.
And that's more likely than him playing it.
Listen, Werner, he one-upped you. You ate a clue. I think Doral would be like, "Oh, I'm real hungry. Nom, nom, nom. Whoops." It's like when you have a dream about eating a marshmallow and you wake up and your pillow is gone. That's what Doral did already.
Wasn't that scene with Doral walking with the bolt on the funniest walkout scene in the history of Survivor? I mean, it was hilarious. I couldn't believe I put it in. Massive props to the production team.
This makes it all the sadder that he's going in this like flaming Doral Geddon. Speaking of, what is the hashtag for this podcast? I have hashtag Doral Geddon. Also, Drunk Letitia.
I mean, I don't want Doral Geddon. I mean, like, I feel like we should reserve Doral Geddon until it actually happens.
We're
Doral doomsday preppers at this point. I sort of like Drunk Letitia just to explain away all the stuff that she did this episode, and because look, it's on her bucket list. She's nearing the end. She can do what she wants, include getting drunk and let her idol slip.
Okay, so you don't think we hit that note too hard. Okay, I'm glad that we're on the same page with this. But Vanna, it was such a pleasure to have you on to talk from someone who has built a bus from your perspective about some pretty extensive bus building going on in this season. Where can everyone find you and follow what you're doing on social media?
I'm not doing a whole lot, but they can get me on Instagram. I'm not pushing like social media platforms every now and then. I just put up there what I'm doing, some pics of my family. They can find me on Instagram and Twitter. If they search, I'll be there, or on Facebook. And yeah, I'm just doing the normal life, and every now and then recording what I'm doing and putting some thoughts out there for people to read.
Awesome. Well, Mike, what do you have going on in the podcast world?
So, as per usual, doing some Big Brother 21 exit press for parade.com. But the big thing that I kicked off the past couple of weeks, which Werner, I know you've been super excited about, is that Josh Wigler and I have launched Down the Hatch, a lost episodic rewatch podcast. We did go back and we are making our way week by week, episode by episode, through a show that is very near and dear to both of our hearts. We just, at the time recording this, post our recap of episode 3, Tabula Rasa, the first quote-unquote regular episode of Lost after the pilot. We got into a lot of good stuff. There's a lot of crisis going on in that episode, both on and off screen, that we had a lot of fun getting into. And coming up is arguably one of the most important episodes of the series in Walkabout, the first John Locke flashback. So make sure you check all of that out. Werner, I know that it's a show that you absolutely love as well. So I'm hopeful that you can listen to us two goofballs talk about a show that we love hopefully as much as you do.
I've got a Lost box set. I've got everything. And what I'll do is I'll take the old CD out and I'll do one episode a week with my wife and follow you guys. When I go out for a run, I'll be listening to you.
I'm so happy about that. It's really tough. A lot of listeners have said, yeah, I'll just do the one episode a week with you guys. But what I've seen more often than not is that you just fall down that rabbit hole, that white rabbit hole, and you just end up binging a season and a half in a week and a half. So we take no offense if anybody ends up doing that. So just give a listen, and thank you all for the support that we've seen so far. And also to come in a couple weeks, speaking of another island, some other Survivor US stuff might be coming people's way as well as we gear up for a very packed month of September. Shannon, I think this is like month 5 of coverage of Survivor South Africa for us.
Well, how old's your baby? It's the same age as your baby. It's a really good way to know that. I mean, look, I'm covering Australian Survivor at the moment, and next week we are doing episodes 18 to 20. It's crazy. Like, I'd say it every week, but it is insane. So if you guys are following along with that, please do listen to the podcast. Last week I had the amazing Liana Boris on, and next week I have the amazing Tess O'Halloran on. So I was saying, you know, just these awesome, smart doctors who come on and are just way smarter than me. And then I feel stupid, but I'm also just like in awe of these amazing women that I get to talk to. So really fun stuff happening on the Australian Survivor podcast, and also fun stuff happening on the South African Survivor podcast, because the aforementioned Josh Wiggler will be coming on with us next week, our final guest, to discuss the penultimate episode, and then Mike and I will be wrapping it up in the finale. So that's going to be amazing. You can always follow me at Shannon Gates, follow Mike at A Mike Bloom Type. But thank you all for listening. And Werner, thank you so much for coming on and sharing, you know, your extreme insights into the game. I love getting to talk to you because it's like you have the experience and you're a super fan like us who comes with it with all this theoretical knowledge. And I just love getting to talk to you about that.
Amen.
It was a great time. Have a great day or night or morning. I don't know where you're at.
It's 2:30 in the morning.
It was amazing.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, look, the three time zones, we make it work every week. And this is really my time. I'm nocturnal anyway, so it works for me. But thank you guys so much for listening. Thanks to you, Mike, as always. I really hope you make it to next week. I'd love to chat to you next week. Thank you, Werner, once again. Great to talk to you. Thanks to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. And we will see you guys with Josh Wiggler next week. Bye.
Bye.